This is Digital Story Podcast number 531, May 10th, 2016. Today's theme is cats and dogs. I'm Derek Story. What's the first thing that many photographers do when they purchase a new camera or lens? They corner the pet cat or dog for an impromptu photo session. But cats and dogs provide us with more than that. They represent choice. Either you're a cat person or a dog lover. And that plays out so many ways in the world of photography. I'll explain more in today's show. I knew I was a different cat as early as 1985 when I turned up my nose at the company's Canon A1 SLR, a big deal in its day, in favor of my own contacts with 3' lenses. My boss thought I was crazy. He said, "Who's going to pass on an A1? He asked, mystified. "It's a nice camera," I responded, "but I prefer my contacts." All right, now, how many of you out there know contacts cameras? Raise your hands. Let me see, one, two. Okay, so there's a few of you. But generally speaking, if I ask how many people know contacts, how many people know Canon, how many people know Nikon, the Canons and Nikons are going to win it by a landslide, right? So here I am choosing some sort of dark horse, so to speak, over a very popular camera. It was time to do my work as a photojournalist. I was employed by this company to do reporting and writing and picture taking. I was a cat. He was a dog. And it goes on from there. I chose Macs over PCs, Aperture over Lightroom, Olympus over Sony, and now Capture One Pro. What's the big deal, really? Well, you know, photographers are funny about choices. So today's show, I'm going to talk about some of the choices that I've made and why. And the reason why I want to do this, not so much that I think you care about the choices I've made, although you may have wondered at some time why I'm doing this over that, why I'm not doing lynda.com titles on Photoshop and I'm doing them on Capture One Pro instead. You may have wondered those things. But really, to just talk about how we fall into these things over the years, each of us, you and me and the guy next door, and then we just ride that wave. We just kind of go with it, and we hang out often with other people who have shared interests. And then if someone asks you at some point, as people often do us because we're the influencers, right? "Well, why do you shoot Nikon?" And you go, "Well, because I like it." And, you know, that's probably not really what they were looking for. They were probably thinking, well, you know, why did you choose Nikon over Canon? You know, what are the reasons for that and all that? But, you know, when you get down to it, you know, you could say, well, the lens selection with Canon is blah, 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 and with Nikon is this and that. And, you know, currently Nikon's doing a little bit better in low light and all that. But are all those really the reasons why you chose Nikon over Canon? I don't think so. I really don't think so. I think we use specification to justify the decisions that we make. But I think we're really making those decisions based on something much more basic, which is emotion, which is look and feel, which is how it feels in our hands, how we feel. See, I'm using feel a lot. How we feel when we hold it and take a picture. I think those are the real reasons why we are a cat person or a dog person, and I'm going to go over some of those examples right now. Why Macs? Let's start there. So it's very interesting. Anyone who's listened to this podcast any amount of time knows that I'm basically platform agnostic in terms of value. I think both Macs and PCs are just fine. I happen to use a Mac, and you've probably wondered, well, yeah, why? And that's actually what we're going to talk about right now. How did I get started on this path of using a Mac when I respect Windows, and I think it's perfectly great way to go. And the tools work fantastic on Windows, and all the apps that I'm currently using, except for the ones designed by Apple, basically run on Windows machines too. And the way I got started on a Mac is just very innocently, which has to do with desktop publishing and Aldus PageMaker. So the desktop publishing revolution is what got me on a Mac. I took a job with a company called National Association of Underwater Instructors, NAUI, in their graphics department. And I eventually ran their graphics and desktop publishing department. And they were using Macs because this visionary at the time, his name was Mike Williams, actually, had discovered Macintoshes and laser printers and had redone their whole desktop publishing system. They produced a magazine, a newsletter, ads, brochures, all this stuff. And they designed all of this stuff and generated the proofs and all that on Macs, on little window Macs. 9-inch. I mean, my iPad window is about the same size as the window on the original Mac that I use to design a newsletter. Isn't that crazy? I learned how to use a Macintosh. I learned about desktop publishing. The job that I had before the National Association of Underwater Instructors, the way that we produced our copy was I wrote it on an IBM Selectric, typed it all out. We spec'd it by pen, and then we took it over to a typesetter who followed our specs, ran out Galley. The Galley came back to me, and I pasted it up on a board. It was photographed, and they made printing plates from it, and that's how that went. So desktop publishing is what got me into the Mac, and then I just stayed with it. I mean, the next job, we used Macs in the graphics department. I stayed with it. The next job after that, not only was I a photojournalist, but I was also the person that kept the desktop publishing system running because I had learned so much about it over the years. And it just went from there. So was I influenced by the 1984 commercial? Not really. Did the ads in magazines sway me from PCs to Mac? No, it had to do with my job. It was a job that I got, and I learned the tools, and the tools helped me make money, and I stuck with them. And that's why I'm using a Mac today and not a Windows machine. It's really very simple. Why Canon DSLRs over Nikon? So in the world of digital SLRs, I came back to Canon. I was shooting contacts for my film, and when it was time to move into the digital age, contacts did not move over. They didn't move over very gracefully at all. In fact, that was the end of them. And so I had to do something. So I went to Canon. And why did I go to Canon? Well, because I picked up a Canon camera that a friend had, and he showed me, you know, the dials, and he showed me the menu system and stuff. And I looked at it, and it felt good in my hands. And then a short time later, I picked up a Nikon camera from another friend and looked at the menus and played with the dials and everything. And the honest truth is the Canon felt better and the menus looked better. And so I said, I'm going with Canon. And again, had nothing to do with lens selection, had nothing to do with the 10D, I think, was the first Canon DSLR that I owned. And, you know, so the resolution was what it was. Everything in those days was crappy in terms of sensor resolution and noise control. So, you know, it wasn't, you know, really any crowning winner there. It really came down to, I like the way the menus looked, I like the way the camera looked, and I like the way the buttons and dials looked. And so I went Canon. And then, as we all know, all of us that use interchangeable lens systems, once you're in knee deep with whatever you have chosen, and you have a few lenses, then you're very reluctant to move. Now, I know guys that have moved. I know guys that have switched from Canon to Nikon and Nikon to Canon. And you know what? It was painful. They did it because, you know, they really had a compelling reason to do so. But it was a painful move. It was a painful move for them. So most of us, we just sort of go with the flow. And to this day, if I'm going to shoot with a DSLR, I'm probably going to shoot with my Canon 5D Mark II, which I still have, which has been serviced, you know, three or four times, not to get it fixed, just to, you know, tune it up and clean it and everything. It works great. The images that I can produce with it seem to satisfy my customers, my professional customers. And I'm a happy camper when it comes to DSLR. Would I have been just as happy with Nikon? Now, my honest answer is going to be probably not. And not because of the quality, not because of the lenses, not because of all that. Again, emotion, feel. How do I feel when I'm shooting with the camera? And I made that initial decision way back when, and I just sort of stuck with it going forward. So there wasn't any big analysis as to why I picked Canon over Nikon. It was infatuation, quite simply. And infatuation led to love, and here I am today. Micro Four Thirds over all the other mirrorless cameras. All right. Well, okay, there is at least a little logic involved with this one. So what got me hooked on Micro Four Thirds was Olympus, even though I really like the Panasonic side, but the retro design that Olympus did. And I was part of the very first crew that shot with the EP1. It was a journalist thing. They sent us all to New York. We went to Coney Island and a couple other places. And they put these EP1s in our hands. And I looked at this pen and, you know, I still have that camera, that original Olympus mirrorless camera, because it is beautiful. The design on it is absolutely gorgeous. And I just looked at this thing and I go, I love this camera. I love this camera. But it was still early in the game, and I could have switched around. And I think what kept me with Olympus and Panasonic and Micro Four Thirds was the lens selection. So there was some logic involved to this. I love the smaller lenses, and I admire very much what Sony is doing in the mirrorless game right now. And when you look at it technologically, it's impressive. It's almost magic what they're doing with the sensors. The sensor size, the low light performance, and all that. But the fact of the matter is that most of the Sony lenses are bigger than what I want to carry around. In other words, there's a price to having that type of performance, and it's a price that I don't really want to pay. So with Micro Four Thirds, with the smaller sensor, the lenses are smaller, they're lighter, and the lens catalog is fantastic. So couple the lenses, the vast selection of lenses and how light and small they are, with the continued beautiful retro design, especially on the Olympus side. And I am just hooked. And again, it is emotion, right? Because if it came down to picture taking quality, my guess is that a top of the line Sony with its best lens is probably going to outperform, for pixel peepers anyway, a top-of-the-line Olympus with this best lens, just because of the sensor, if no other reason. So it's not that. It's not that at all. It's this that I love holding. The camera that I prefer using these days is the OMD EM5 Mark II. I just adore that camera. I like everything about it. And when I'm shooting digital, it is the camera that I reach for. I like looking at it. I like the way it feels. Love it. Just absolutely love that camera. The other camera that I use a lot is the OMD EM10 Mark II, and I like the Mark I too on those cameras. Again, love, love, love. These are all emotional terms. It's interesting, isn't it? But I have no plans on moving to any other mirrorless brand for my work because I really like what I have right now. And I don't even care about logic. You know, it's a little bit like politics, really, you know, where You know, once people make up their mind on a candidate, the debates and stuff don't really make any difference, right? Because if your candidate does well on the debate, then, you know, that just reinforces what you were already feeling. And if the other guy does well, you're just going to ignore him anyway and still think that your candidate did well. In other words, the facts don't really come into play that much. So mirrorless over the other mirrorless cameras, Olympus got me with the retro design and then the fantastic collection of lenses. All right, why Aputure and Capture One over Photoshop and Lightroom? This one's a bit more complicated, really. So in the early days, I used Photoshop just like everyone else did. And to be honest with you, and this is just among us kids right now, I never really liked it. I mean, I liked what it could do, but I never really liked the interface. I never really liked the terminology that they used for the different tools. I was never comfortable. It was always like, I got to do some image editing now. It was like that thing. It was like work. It was like having to take out the trash or something. I don't know. It was not enjoyable. So then iPhoto came along. And I liked iPhoto a lot. And some of you older folks will remember that I was part of iPhoto, The Missing Manual, the very first, three or four editions with David Pogue and Joe Scherr. And I became an iPhoto expert. And I spoke at Macworld about iPhoto. And, you know, iPhoto was my thing. Now, it wasn't perfect, and I still had to use Photoshop, you know, for certain tasks. But for me, it was a breath of fresh air in terms of managing my images and all that. And remember, I was already on a Mac. Go back to, you know, example number one. So then Aputure came out. And I knew about Aputure way before it was released because I was an iPhoto expert. Apple wanted to know what I thought about this new thing they're working on called Aputure. And I loved it. And I taught the first non-Apple Aputure workshop and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And, of course, became an advocate for that software. At the same time, Lightroom was doing great. And Lightroom surpassed Aputure in terms of users. It had a bigger community. It was definitely the more popular kid on the block. And yet I didn't care. I did not care at all. I was never tempted to jump ship from Aputure to Lightroom because emotionally, I just didn't like Lightroom as much. I was fine with it, but I didn't love it. I didn't love it. And I did love Aputure. So I stuck with Aputure all the way to the end. That's love, right? That's love. Stuck with it all the way to the end. But then when the end came, I had to make a decision. You know, what was I going to do? Was I going to move on with my life? Was I going to stay stuck in the past? What was I going to do? And so I started looking around. And I kind of felt like one of these old guys who had lost his partner and then suddenly found himself, you know, trying to date again. It was kind of that awkward, you know, and I was checking out, you know, everything. I looked at everything. And I was resistant to Capture One in the beginning because it wasn't love at first sight. And that's very interesting to me. Aputure was love at first sight, as was a lot of these other selections that I've made over the years, was pretty much totally emotional and very much in love. And Capture One wasn't that way. Capture One was probably one of the first rational decision-making processes I had gone through for something that's so important to my daily working life. And I had a pros and cons list with Capture One and, you know, its competitors. And I analyzed it and I had to work to learn it. I just didn't fall into it like I had the other apps. It was interesting for me going through that process and not being in love. But the problem was, in all honesty, my true love had passed away. And I looking around and you know, no one else, you know, scratched that same itch. So I was forced to do something with my brain instead of my heart. And that's why I'm with Capture One right now. It I'm not in love with it. I really like it. I appreciate what it can do. But at the end of the day, it won the pros and cons list. And that's why I'm there right now. Which makes me think, you know, this is very interesting to me. Which makes me think I'm vulnerable to someone coming along and turning my head. I mean, really, when you think about it, you know, if you're in a relationship that's working and you like it, but you're not in love, aren't you vulnerable to, you know, someone catching your eye? I don't know. I'm just telling you the truth here. So that's how I ended up with Capture One, which is very much the exception to many of the things that I've talked about so far. One more, and finally, last one here. I know I'm going on about this, but this is interesting to me in the sense of how we end up where we end up. So you notice that I've been talking a bit about film these days. And what happened there? Why film? I mean, really, again, rationally speaking, it doesn't really make any sense. And I had forgotten about film. And film to me is like the old high school flame that I ran into again at a Starbucks and then just suddenly go, wow, I forgot how much I liked you. And then the next thing you know, I'm shooting film all the time again. It is, again, so emotional. The cameras I love. The way that the film looks compared to digital, I love. And it's just love, 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 love all over the place again. The way it's really worked out is that digital will always be the major part of my photography. That's just the way it is. And the digital cameras that I use, I just adore. But some things you never get over. And for me, film was one of those things that I never got over. And when I was reintroduced to it again, it just flared right back up. And the way that I look at it is going to be forever now going forward. It's going to be both of them. And they're just going to have to learn how to live together, both digital and film, because I'm not giving up either one of them. So that's my cats and dogs list. And I'd be curious if you wanted to share, you know, one or two of your anecdotes, you know, do so on our Facebook page and just tell me why you chose Sony over Samsung or whatever it happened to be. You're going to have to keep it short because the comments can't go on too long on the Facebook page. I find it fascinating how we end up where we are and how we so often stick with those decisions that we make way long time ago for very emotional reasons. In the news, steel wool photographer burns down historic 1920s landmark, as reported by Petapixel. Back on April 9th, 2016, a fire consumed the Monroe Station in South Florida's Big Cypress National Preserve at around midnight. Firefighters responded to the scene, but they weren't able to save the building before it completely burned to the ground. Big Cypress National Preserve announced today that after police investigation, a photographer turned himself in on April 11th after being labeled by officials as a person of interest and a primary suspect. The man confessed to trespassing at Monroe Station with two other photographers and climbing onto the roof in order to shoot light painting photos with the sparks from burning steel wool. The two villains right now in the world of photography, one I addressed last week, which is for some people drones and for other people drones are heroes. And I tried to cover both sides of that last week. But the other thing, this steel wool stuff, this is starting to drive me crazy because unlike the supposed drone that collided with a British Airways thing that ended up being a plastic bag, these steel wool incidents are really steel wool incidents. And people are burning stuff down and they're creating fire hazards. And it's just making me nuts. And maybe part of it is because of the Point Reyes boat that's right in my backyard that was damaged by steel wool. But the bottom line is here, I just read this story because for me, this is personal. I'm getting tired of photographers getting black eyes for doing stupid things when we already have a big enough PR problem as it is. So my plea to all of you is, whether it's steel wool or something else, just behave yourselves. Just behave yourselves. Don't burn anything down if you can help it. MacPaw releases Gemini 2. And this is pretty cool, and I got to test it. So what is Gemini 2? It's a new improved version of their duplicate Finder app. And what it does is, when you run Gemini 2, it shows all of your duplicates for both audio files and photo files in detail and lets you remove them in a click. And it's packed with all sorts of new features. This is the new version that is just announced today. We're on the cutting edge here. It finds similar files, songs and pics that are almost identical, maybe a variation based on some sort of edit you did. It finds them and lets you make decisions there. It scans iTunes and photos and external drives in addition to the images that are just on your local hard drive. It highlights the differences between the files. And then it notes how you select files for removal, and then it remembers that. And then it'll start using some of that logic for future runs. And then it lets you put back the files that you've trashed if you want to. So this is a pretty cool app. It's super affordable. And to celebrate, MacPaw is providing a 50% off discount store-wide, the whole range of MacPaw products until May 17th. Until May 17th. All you got to do is go to the show notes page and then click on the link in the show notes. Go over there. Definitely take a look at Gemini 2. Look at Clean My Mac. Look at all the other stuff that they have. And 50% off is a big deal. I don't think we're going to see that again. Make sure you use the link on the show notes page so that they know you came from the Digital Story. Grab it now. Grab it now. And I tell you, Gemini 2, it's a good one. I think you're going to like it. So we have a winner. We have the winner of the 5 rolls of Tri-X 35mm film. And congratulations to Fred S. Brundick, who won the 5 rolls of Fresh Tri-X just by sending in his About That Shot. So I looked at the entries. I liked Fred's the best. I'm going to run it on the site. It should be there by the time you hear this podcast. And when you look at the picture that Fred sent in, you'll see that Tri-X is the perfect fit for him because it's a lovely black and white shot that he took. The way that he got the 5 rolls of film was that last week I announced that if you send me your version of About That Shot, a film shot with a paragraph about the image, and I select it as the best of the bunch, then I'll run it on the Analog Story, and that person gets 5 rolls of film. So congratulations, Fred. We're going to be doing more things like this, so keep your ears tuned to possible giveaways. So we've already given away a film camera and lens. Now we've given away film. Who knows what's next? And if you are interested in film, make sure you go to theanalogstory.com. So I want to talk about Flickr just for a second. Flickr. Flickr could be on my list also that I talked about earlier of things that I just fell in love with and I stuck with. And not in lieu of other things, because I use Instagram a lot also, but I still to this day use Flickr a lot, and I still to this day care a lot about Flickr. And that's one of the reasons why I was really happy that I got to be the Lynda instructor for the Flickr titles. Even though I have to say it's a bit of a challenge because Flickr is changing all the time. So we were kind of patching together the current Flickr title, patching it, and finally we just said, nah, we got to redo it from scratch. And so the new one's up. And so if you haven't visited your Flickr account in a while and you haven't looked at it on your Android device or your iPhone, the Flickr app, this would be a great time to do it, because I tell you, it is pretty cool these days and is very useful. And I do all sorts of stuff with Flickr, including automatically back up all my images because I got a free terabyte of storage. I use it as my online hub, so I can send shots out of Flickr to LinkedIn, to Facebook, to Instagram, to Twitter, all that kind of stuff. It's just, and then I have, you know, the whole Flickr experience, looking at the images by all the other folks. And of course, our member photo of the day that I run on Facebook, that's all from our Flickr public group. We have a digital story public group that has almost 60,000 images in it now. Isn't that something? That's crazy. So anyway, I'm really excited about the new Flickr title. It's called Sharing Photos with Flickr. It's at lynda.com, L-Y-N-D-A.com. And I just wrapped up a companion to that, which is Flickr Mobile. What we did is we broke the desktop version of Flickr and the mobile version into two separate trainings. I just finished recording the mobile version. It's going into editing. It should be out pretty soon too. So I feel really good about having fresh, state-of-the-art material up on Flickr. If you're interested in Flickr, go over and take a look. There's lots of free movies. And maybe I'll see you there. And definitely contribute to the member photo of the day. That's just a great thing. And I tell you, it's very popular on our Facebook page. People really like those images. And finally, I want to mention our good friends over at Red River Paper, who saved me again. They saved me again. For Mother's Day, it's pretty interesting. Our boys are off at college, and this was the first Mother's Day where the boys weren't home, which is kind of a big deal in our house. So I'm thinking, oh my God, what am I going to do? You know, plus I had my own mom had to make sure she had flowers and a card and a phone call, of course. I had a great time with my mom. We had a great phone conversation. She loved the flowers, but at home I needed to do something for this first time without the boys. I made a card using Red River paper, my inkjet printer, of a shot of the two boys and me that had been taken last summer. I used the templates and photos for OS 10, which I write about in the new book. I write about how to use photos for OS 10 to make fine art cards at home without having to send them off to Apple. So I did that, and I printed it out on Red River cardstock and use their envelopes and everything. And I tell you, everything that I did that day to help make up for the boys not being home, I think was helpful. But the thing that was the killer thing was that handmade card using that image and that design and that paper. She just loved it. It's on her nightstand right now. I just can't overemphasize the value of a print sometimes. If I would have showed her the same image on the iPhone, it wouldn't have made the impact that it did. Red River Paper, they're a great sponsor of this podcast. I really believe in the products that they have. And they have a tile on all the pages of the digital story, and they have a great Facebook page, facebook.com/redriverpaper. Thanks, guys, for saving me yet again. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. I know it was a little different, but maybe I'm a bit more philosophical this week than normal, but I hope you liked it. Next week, I've got some great stories I'm working on. Come back and join me. You know it's going to be different again, right? It's like anything else. It's like the weather. If you don't like it one week, come back the next week. It'll be completely different. All right. Until then, bye-bye now.